It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Go off and running. I'm operating on a new microphone channel, trying to sort out some technical glitches. You may have noticed along the way there's been an occasional little pop, like an electrical snap. Wondering if that was in mic channel one. So I've moved over to mic channel two, but I was a little late on the uptake for the well howdy because, well, I did what I always did do, and that was to run up the fader on mic channel one. That has now been corrected. Might take a little time to get this new habit going. But we'll find out. We'll see how it all plays out. Oh, hi. I'm Bob. It's Morin Monday on the horn. And boy, is it ever. And we will get to it all in fairly short order. Yes, we will. But, you know, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and so consequently, this program begins with gratitude too. Thank you to Mona and Joseph. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Sharon, Suman, Randy in PA. Thank you to our buddy Robert in Australia. Thank you one and all for being subscribers and partial sponsors of the program. It is the 29th day of June 2020, the penultimate day of June 2020. I'm beginning to feel like, you know, but you know, if 2020 was a kid, we would have given it a timeout by now, or maybe just, you know, made it go live in the basement, you know, like Boo Radley. Why do I say that? Because I say that because just before airtime, even as I was enjoying myself, there's some fresh food porn up over at my Instagram and Facebook and Twitter timelines. I've been brining pork loins obviously enough, brine for 2 days. And this afternoon, I fired up the acorn and got it to temperature, and then I did that little thing that I've learned. I'd never seen anybody else do it, but I do it and it works out well. The trifold pork loin, cut it one way, then cut it the other, so it's got two folds actually. It's like a trifold wallet, and then stuff it with wonderful things. Tie it up with butcher's twine, and then slowly smoke it, and then finish it off, you know, either wrapped up with foil or in a covered pan. It was the pan this time. And, wow. One I did as I have done before. That was cilantro and fresh mozzarella and jalapenos and pineapple. The other one, however, was a new idea, and that was Kerrygold Dubliner cheese and freshly sliced peaches and pears, drizzled with local raw honey, and then sprinkled with some ground proprietary spices, rolled and tied up, and they were both done at about 35 minutes ago. So there had to be a tasting. And the tasting was a fabulous success. So as soon as the program's over, dinner will be saved. Who knows? Maybe that'll be on the menu if you know, when and if we ever get around to the Hornin. And I say if because of something that broke from the BBC just shortly before airtime. Oh, and by the way, if you would like to augment your listening experience if you listen live to the program, then by all means, run on over to headon.live and click on chat room. And if you never have before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe all around. Wrong button. That's going to take a little getting used to. I don't know, Roger. Garlic alongside the pear and the peaches might not. I can't see that. But I used some ground cloves, some ground cinnamon, some ground ginger, ground nutmeg. It's fabulous. And the ooey-gooey melted Kerrygold Dubliner is heavenly. The other one with the pineapple and the jalapeno is a different story altogether. I smoked it all over cherry wood. But by all means, jump in because we've got a merry group over going in the chat room. If you go now, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Otto and Roger and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. He is ably assisted by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Okay. It'll be a good time. Also at headon.live, this is just the housekeeping that goes with the front end of the program. You know, all your podcasting needs are there. Bulletproof podcasting and bulletproof live streaming. If you want to listen to the live stream, go to headon.live. If you rely on places like TuneIn, sooner or later you will be disappointed. So, that being the case, what was I to? Oh yeah. So I had just brought the pork loins off, and we had tasted them, and now they're sitting back. I banked the fire down to about 125 degrees or so, and it's just staying nice and warm. And not the thing with a pork loin can dry out if you look at it hard. So this is I'm just preserving it until the dinner hour. But as I brought, we got done with the tasting and I took a picture of the finished product and then I sat down and looked at my breaking news. I probably shouldn't have. Nah, I have to. It's the nature of the beast. I looked at the breaking news and there it was from the BBC. No, really, 2020, go stand in a corner. Seriously. Reported by Michelle Roberts, the health editor at BBC News Online, the headline, Flu Virus with Pandemic Potential Found in China. Oh, well, that's just fucking great. But it gets even better. A new strain of flu that has the potential to become pandemic has been identified in China by scientists. This will, of course, occasion another round of madness here. I was trying to think of a way, because, like I said before, I'm always trying to think of a way to explain what appears to be the unexplainable to people who don't want it explained to them in the first place. Like the guy whose picture I think it was our buddy Irwin who shared it with me, Irwin in North Dakota, or Montana, rather, formerly of North and South Dakota. But it was a picture of a guy in a maggot hat on an airplane, looked like everything that you would expect a maggot to look like, hadn't shaved in a few days, had his earbuds in, and his maggot hat on, of course. And on top of it all, he was wearing a mask. No, really. The maggot was wearing a mask. Unfortunately, he was wearing it as a blindfold and did not have it covering his mouth or his nose. And in that moment, you just go, well, that's just everything. And so I was thinking, how is it that we manage to introduce bad things into our bodies? For instance, if you roll up some tobacco leaves and you set, dried tobacco leaves and you set fire to them and you breathe the smoke in, well, you'll get yourself rapidly addicted to nicotine and start doing horrible things to the insides of your body. Or let's say you've got a spoon and some heroin and a little bit of water, and you cook the spoon, you cook the heroin in the spoon over some water or over a fire with the water, and then you take a syringe and you suck the heroin up into the syringe through the cotton, and then you jam it in one of your veins and you push the plunger. The next thing you know, you're wrecking your body with heroin. Does a pattern emerge? You chop up the cocaine on the mirror with the razor blade till it's nice and fine. And then you cut it out into nice little lines and you snort one with one nostril and you snort the other with the other nostril. And the next thing you know, well, cocaine does what cocaine does, and you turn into an asshole. Then you develop a Jones, and shit goes sideways. And having considered those three means of introduction of a poison into the body, I thought then about COVID-19. And about how that has been injected into our bodies by the stupidity of the maggots, who, instead of recognizing that science is real, rely on bot-generated horseshit that they see online that tells them things like, it's illegal to make people wear a mask because of the ADA and HIPAA. And they have a breathing condition. You know the drill. You know the script. Right. But where syringes or cigarettes or lines introduce individual toxins into individual bodies, stupidity and maggots introduced it into our nation and made it ever so much worse. And so, having previously been warned that shit is going to get ever so much worse, I mean, that was a today kind of thing, the head of the WHO said that the Rona is actually speeding up around the world and that it's going to get significantly worse. And I take the WHO seriously. Whenever Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey tell me something, I take it to the bank. Yeah, I kid. I kid. But the World Health Organization did say that today. It is speeding up and getting worse. And all we can do as people of reasonable intelligence is take the experts at their word and take every precaution that we possibly can and act accordingly. But on top of that information coming from the World Health Organization, we got this. A new strain of flu that has the potential to become pandemic has been identified in China by scientists. We don't know which scientists. It's probably not American scientists because, well, we've got a shit for brains, a nasty little bigoted xenophobic freak in the White House. It emerged recently and is carried by pigs, but can infect humans, the scientists say. The researchers are concerned that it could mutate further so that it can spread easily from person to person and trigger a global outbreak. They say it has all the hallmarks of being highly adapted to infect humans and needs close monitoring. And because it's brand spanking new, people could have little or no immunity to the virus. The article goes on to compare this strain to the swine flu that emerged in Mexico, probably in a toxic waste lagoon run by one of the massive pork operations. That was less deadly than had initially been expected, because there were enough older people in the population who had some immunity from similar strains. This bug ain't that bug. This bug, like COVID-19, is novel. I somehow think that this has to do with our ongoing attempt to fuck the planet, but that's just me. Pay attention to the name. It has a name. The researchers call this new flu virus G4EAH1N1. Grows and multiplies in the cells that line human airways. They found evidence of recent infections starting in people who worked in abattoirs and the swine industry in China. And current flu vaccines don't appear to work on it. Professor Qinqiao Chang, who works at Nottingham University in the UK, told the BBC, "Right now we are distracted with coronavirus, and rightly so, but we must not lose sight of potentially dangerous new viruses. We should not ignore it." Well, here in the United States of Stupid, that means we probably will. Jesus God, we keep asking the question, how much harm can having this man in the White House do to us in the next 6 months? And we're getting a little hint here and there, including this latest. But yes, the World Health Organization, their head man, chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said, "Although many countries have made some progress globally, the pandemic is actually speeding up. The single most important intervention is tracing and quarantine contacts, which, of course, fully a third of this country is unwilling to participate in, making them active vectors of the disease. they and their aforementioned stupidity. Citing early reopenings, Director General Ghebreyesus said that that's part of the speed up. Although many countries have made some progress globally, the pandemic is actually speeding up. We all want this to be over. We all want to get on with our lives. But the hard reality is that this is not even close to being over. Now, he said that trying to be a little bit politic in his remarks. But the reason we're nowhere near to having it over is because, well, we're the United States of stupid. 5% of the population and 25% of the disease. Okay, not quite 25, but more than 23%. Of the 189,077 brand new cases that were reported globally on Sunday alone, yesterday, came from Merca. But our American exceptionalism is in jeopardy because while true that the disease is most poorly handled by authoritarian right-wing dickheads. Well, one authoritarian right-wing dickhead is closing on us fast. Only one country had more than the United States' new cases announced yesterday. And that was Brazil! Yes. Who, of course, is run by a right-wing dickhead who is weaponizing the virus to try to get rid of some folks that he finds not to his liking. And by that, I mean indigenous people in Brazil. In particular, the Arara people of Amazonian Brazil. They're extremely vulnerable to COVID-19, and they are scared. Survival International, a movement for tribal people's rights, issued a report a week ago. And it quotes an Arara man as saying, "We're very worried." And that's for good reason, because the Arara people of the Cachoeira Seca territory have the highest COVID-19 infection rate in the Brazilian Amazon. 46% of the 121 Arara people, A-R-A-R-A, by the way, if you're curious, who live in that reserve, the Cachoeira Seca, 46% of them have the virus. But experts think that everybody in the territory could very well be infected. In the interview with Survival International, the Arara man they spoke to said, "At the health post, there is no medicine, no ventilator. We wanted a ventilator for that post so we wouldn't have to go into town. The village is 3 days away from the city where the hospital is located. We're asking for protection with these coronavirus cases. The number of invaders has increased a lot. They're cutting down a lot of timber. The government isn't stopping them. There are too many invaders in the area." The so-called Western world first made contact with the Arara people only 33 years ago. And there are still uncontacted peoples in the area. And the more that Jair Bolsonaro can kill, the happier he is, because he is a worthless, fascist, punk-ass thug. What a horror. 33 years it's taken white people to wipe out a group of indigenous individuals who have lived successfully on that land for, Jesus, 15,000 years? We're rather a nasty lot, aren't we? Nope. No ventilator for the Aurora people. Fiona Watson is the International Research and Advocacy Director of Survival International. She said in the last 40 years, the Aurora's forests have been decimated and many of them have died from introduced diseases. President Bolsonaro is now overseeing the destruction of both a once thriving people and the rainforest they managed and looked after for millennia. Brazilian and international solidarity to resist this genocide is desperately needed. Well, if we can ever wrest our country away from the clutches of a fascist monstrosity here, maybe we can gin up some of that solidarity. But that's 6 months. 6 months away. And that may be the last 6 months on Earth for a people who have lived successfully upon it in this hemisphere alone for something like 15,000 years. Jesus. But like I said, there's a ton of stupid to keep up with. Let's check in with a new Trump nominee. You know what USAID is, of course. We all do. The United States Agency for International Development. USAID is supposed to maintain hopefully more than nominal independence from the federal government itself. Among other things, USAID is in charge of training members of our foreign service who do things administering aid programs for global poverty, disaster relief in the aforementioned developing world. Well, they've got the maggot in chief has nominated a new head of USAID. Her name is Merritt Corrigan. And it turns out Merritt Corrigan is the perfect Trump nominee for an organization dedicated to working on things like global poverty in the developing world, where folks most of the time ain't white. Mm-hmm. Introducing Merritt Corrigan, who tried to scrub her Twitter feed, but the internet doesn't forget. At one point, she was hired by the Hungarian embassy in D.C. It was a little bit before that she tweeted,
Our homo empire couldn't tolerate even one commercial enterprise not in full submission to the tyrannical LGBT agenda.
Yeah, something makes me think that had something to do with Chick-fil-A, maybe? But her vitriol was not reserved for members of the LGBTQ community alone. She, a woman, apparently maintains a fairly low estimation of her own gender. She apparently doesn't much like Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. It was October 2019 when she took to the Twitters. That is, less than a year ago.
This sick statement by Warren, which glibly marks a real crisis happening in our society, is exactly why women shouldn't be in office. They will always advocate for themselves at the expense of men and revel in it.
Oh, dear. Gender issues, much?
Merit? Western women are slowly waking up to the lies of feminism and the organized effort to push us toward an empty life of isolation and childlessness. Right-wing gatekeepers have made it abundantly clear that their allegiance is to Satan and those who carry out his agenda of appalling sexual perversion over those who question the liberal status quo.
That's when she got mad because a right-wing hate radio host had shared a photo that he took standing with a drag queen, which is different because I try to actually learn from my mistakes, which is different from a photo of somebody standing next to Rudy Giuliani in a dress, because that's just a guy in a dress. That's no drag queen. See? I can learn. It was 2019 when a report came out that things were getting a little bit better in terms of the humanitarian crisis in poor, bedraggled Somalia. That's when Merritt Corrigan went off and again and said,
"Well, great. Can we send the 70,000-plus Somalis in Minnesota back then?" Immigration is the hostile governing elite's preferred agent of chaos.
That's your new USAID director. At one point in time, she was in charge of managing the official Trump store at CPAC. That was 2018. She's a big, 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 big fan of fascist asshole Viktor Orban in Hungary, because, of course, she worked for their embassy, and the check kept clearing. Or maybe that's not why she's a fan. Maybe she's just a fascist. And there's oodles of them that she failed to properly scrub. She said that Pete Buttigieg was pretending to be in a real marriage. She really hates her some gay people. October 2019 again.
The morally bankrupt GOP must be held accountable for its total capitulation to and tacit endorsement of the gay agenda. The conservative case for just throwing in the towel and embracing globo-homo.
but like I said, she reserves a lot of ire for her own gender. Birth control is an evil tool that has been used to systematically manipulate women into believing casual sex doesn't hurt them as long as they don't get pregnant. And it's cruel and wrong to empower young women and tell them that they're equal to men. Jesus. I guess it's Monday, isn't it? Oh, it's so Monday. Yeah, give me just a second here. I need to tweak something. Not liking the way. Oh, okay, that's, I like that a little bit better. So many settings here. It was a big weekend for the Karens and the Chads and Brads. If you know anything about the greater St. Louis area, you know that one of their, for all intents and purposes, royal families was the progeny of August A. Bush, the man who founded Anheuser-Busch, brought us Budweiser and Bud Light and Michelob Ultra cheerleader beer, and don't no emails. That's what the cheerleaders call it. Michelob Ultra is cheerleader beer, and Bud and Bud Light chiladas and. Well, the Bush family, the old man, gave lots of money for mansion building to his kids. And one of those kids, one of his daughters, took the money and they built a massive turn-of-the-century Italianate palatial home. A few decades back, a pair of plaintiff's lawyers, married to each other, bought the mansion in a severely dilapidated condition and began working at restoring it to its former greatness. Now, they did this having made tons of money off of things like, I would presume, medical malpractice, products liability, car wrecks, what have you. And the estate it's gated, and it is located in the central west end of St. Louis proper. Marble floors. Trump would be right at home. It's really, really tacky and Baroque. It was Baroque and they never should have fixed it. Ah. Where's my damn cowbell? Giving myself a little tiny cowbell for that tired and trite old pun. And so it was that this weekend, there were some Black Lives Matter protesters marching through the central west end of St. Louis. They were on the sidewalks. They were completely within their rights. And these two lawyers emerged into the yard and have become internet infamous since. He came out and a little pudgy, and he's carrying his AR-15 Freedom Protector, and his wife is carrying a little semi-automatic purse pistol, and she's pointing it at the protesters, and he's menacing with his gun. Although the fact of the matter is, in some of the photos, perspective can sometimes be a little sketchy. Our pals Gary and Gaia, wonderful photographers out in Oregon, know this. But it looks for all the world like if that AR-15 gets fired, the round is going to go right through his wife. And he's probably going to catch the hot brass from the ejector right in the fucking neck. She violates the first rule of firearm safety because, you know, we're not crazy about firearms here, but there are things you do to try to be safer and, more importantly, more responsible with a firearm, and that is to never put one's finger upon the trigger until ready to fire. One keeps one's finger outside the trigger guard on a pistol, or a rifle for that matter. Oh, but not her. No. Not her. Not Bonnie and Claude. Jesus, wealth is no proof of intelligence. Let's just put it that way. And so hopefully they will be charged and by photographic evidence convicted of the, I think it's like a class 6 felony in Missouri, menacing. It was merely the presence of Black Lives Matter protesters were enough to send those two bumbling and stumbling out of their Italianate mansion and into their manicured yard to brandish weapons at people who were literally wearing T-shirts that read, "Hands up, don't shoot." You can't make this stuff up. Then, of course, in Washington State, Washington State, Horn Community Family Congregation, Spokane, where a white man and woman accused a black woman of shoplifting. Hint, the white man and white woman were not members of law enforcement. The story came from KREM-TV. They said she stole shoes. The woman held a gun on her while the man says, "Get your ass in the car!" And the woman says, "I can fucking shoot you. I'm a Democrat." Because Merca. There is so much of this stuff over the course of this weekend, it's almost breathtaking. And then Haley sent this along from Arkansas. Restaurants have never really closed for indoor dining there. Arkansas's COVID cases are climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And so in Little Rock, there's a steakhouse called the Saltgrass Steakhouse, at which, in which a woman is sitting at the bar minding her own business. When she is accosted by white people and she objects to their lack of social distancing and wants them the hell out of her face. Cue up Lee Greenwood.
You dare to move! You have to be 6 feet away from me! You see how you talk to him! You see how you talk to him! You see, this is my man!
Now, just to make the scene a little clearer for you, there's a white guy in a tank top who is trying to stand between the woman sitting at the bar and the Karen, who is insistent upon getting in her face. It doesn't, well, there's no stopping a Karen. As Haley points out, and Karens are always going to Karen.
But we are blessed. You are using your employees on the other man. Spit on me. He coughed on me.
He coughed on me and spit on me. You know, there, it's okay to get upset about that. It's one thing to be pissing and moaning about all about how I got a condition that keeps me from wearing a mask, and that's why I'm screaming in public. And then the OSHA and the HIPAA and the ADA say, I ain't got to tell you what I got, and you're trampling my constant, you know, behaving like a maggot. On the other hand, knowing as we do what the coronavirus has done in the black community and its disproportionate impact, when the blonde lady tried to get up in the woman's face, she kind of had a right to. No, there's no kind of. She had a right to get pissed off. You get back. I've given a couple of people looks. As in, get the fuck back. Because I'm one of the few people around here who will wear a goddamn mask when they go out. Because stupid people. I really think you could probably do a research project and walk away with a tasty new PhD if you sampled the number of people in my little county who wear masks and those who do not, then give them all IQ tests. And you'd walk away with your PhD for noting the paucity of people of even average intelligence in this area. And now the blonde lady has flanked the guy trying to keep her away from the woman sitting at the bar. And she's going to get up on her and spew on her and LARP and smolik some more. And glombinate some virus particles at her. The guy who was trying to keep her distance has now been engaged by another dude in an American flag shirt. Uh-oh. That was breaking glass. That was a beer mug or something being broken over the head of American flag guy by an intervener trying to protect the woman sitting at the bar. And shit got real after that. And it all begins with, honey, let's go have a steak at the Saltgrass Steakhouse. Haven't been out in a while. Sure would be nice to have a big, thick, juicy ribeye in the middle of a pandemic. I have a feeling that dissertation would be available not just here in my little county, but probably in Little Rock, too. Merciful heaven. And then we've got us a, we got us another one. This one at a Trader Joe's, where a woman was told to keep her mask on, which she did not wish to do, and then began to throw a tantrum. Yeah, those sounds are her groceries being thrown out of the buggy and onto the floor. Pitched. Tossed. We have grocery workers here among our friends in the Horn Family Community Congregation. And I dare say some of them have seen this kind of behavior. But moreover, the people who work in retail know what it means to have edible goods thrown onto the floor. You know, during a pandemic.
Call the police.
Yeah, because she just sashays out of the grocery store. And at the very end, you hear the individual say, call the police. No follow-up. I don't know if she was arrested. She should have been. She was very clearly engaged in, I don't know what the jurisdiction refers to it, but here it would be called destruction of property. And they don't get to hide behind, it's a pandemic and I just lost my shit. Because there are plenty of us who are in the self-same pandemic and not losing our shit. I'd guess that these assholes exist in numbers similar to those of generalized support for Clorox Claudius. They're the same bunch. And then in Florida, we have Lloyd Crawford, who appears to be doing some day drinking. No, maybe it's not Florida. I'm not sure. We'll find out. He's got his shorts that hang down below his knees on and a burgundy t-shirt going for him. And he saunters up to somebody, just someone protesting on a corner because, hey, it's America and you can do that. Lloyd Crawford, because he identified himself, he even held his business card up. Well, Lloyd Crawford has some questions.
My name's Lloyd Crawford. What's your name? Put the phone down. What is your name?
I'm not telling you.
You're not telling me what name is. You're sitting here in Germantown, Tennessee.
That's right.
Are you from Germantown?
My bad. Germantown, Tennessee. But Lloyd, the internet went and checked in on Lloyd. And Lloyd's worked several places, but yes, Germantown, Tennessee, a suburb of greater Memphis. Lloyd's clever because he's going to tell him his name, and so that'll make the other guy have to tell him his, right? No.
Hey, man, you're sitting here in Germantown, Tennessee.
That's right.
Are you from Germantown?
East Memphis.
You're not from Germantown?
No.
Okay, but you're sitting here in my town promoting your violence.
Have you been drinking?
No, I haven't.
Smells.
Yeah, he has. A little day drinking in Germantown by Lloyd Crawford. Promoting your violence. Right.
Kind of like you've been drinking.
Well, I tell you what, pal. You give me a call. I would like you out of my town. Quick.
There we go. Thanks, Lloyd. Drive safe. Don't get a DUI.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. And by the time I caught up with this story, his he's a certified financial planner of some sort. And the phone had been ringing off the hook for a while there. One wonders if Lloyd has since maybe checked into a qualified rehab program. Kyle with a note. This is all planned. They go to make a scene to play the victim as if somehow that will make them look better. Yeah, these people are fucking insane. Damnation. Oh, and by the way, as Flavio reminds us, the woman who was throwing groceries out of her cart, which James in Illinois points out, they're not her groceries unless she's paid for them. So true. So she is, in fact, committing destruction of property, or whatever they call it. Her dating profile, Flavio reminds us, says, super chill, enjoys Trader Joe's. But of course, Natch. And by the way, Jack in Shreveport lets us know, as many bands are doing, the Dixie Chicks have just become the Chicks. Lady Antebellum, having way late figured out what that word meant, has decided they're going to be Lady A, but there's already an artist named Lady A, so no word yet what the new name is. But Jack in Shreveport says, James Corden's late show band changed their name from Karen to Michelle. I'm thinking we can probably guess why.
Michelle, ma belle, someday monkey, no, play piano song.
A lot of people out there thought that's what the words were because they never had high school French. Sans les mots qui vont très bien ensemble. Listeners got Someday Monkey, no play piano song, play piano song.
Came in really handy when that became an episode of Powerpuff Girls.
Now I have to watch that after the program. God, that was a good episode. It's the one that riffs on Yoko Ono and John and Kyle's having a good time this evening. LOL. Lloyd's real smart. Identify himself so he can be fired again from his job and everything. God damn, these people are morons. That's why we save them for Moran Monday, Kyle. Years and years and years of this now. JR with a note. Hi, Bob. Another day, another ride on Columbus Public Transit. Just another routine nightmare in COVID world. Not the kind of person who, when I see wrongdoing, sits silently. I'll call it out. So it was that I was verbally threatened, accused of being a racist, and egads, a fucking Trump supporter, for calling out to people who were riding Columbus City buses without masks. The Transit Authority established the mandatory mask rule in March at the onset of the first shutdown. Didn't have a lot of staying power, that first shutdown. Given what I'm about to relate, I believe a second, even more severe shutdown will occur before year's end. As I've traveled around the city over the weekend, I've seen a lot of slippage, and not just the mask slipping off one's nose, but wholesale flouting of mask-wearing rules in grocery stores. What are those? We still don't have any of those. Walmart asked you if you might, wouldn't mind, and so it's like one out of every 200 people has a mask on at Wally World. Today, for instance, nearly all the young people I saw in Kroger didn't bother during the BLM protest still going on here last weekend and on the street. Today, I discreetly told the driver that a rider was not wearing a mask, and when the driver in turn told the person to put it on, he got up in my shit and accused me of being a racist. He was black, I'm white, and that he'd like to talk to me when I get off the bus.
I said I would call the police to escort me off the bus if that was necessary. No, I'm not a Brad. But the worst incident was on the second leg of the trip after I transferred to my local line on East Broad Street. An elderly black man, I mention race because it's an element in this incident. He was not wearing his mask over his nose as is required. The bus driver stopped the bus, asked him to put the mask on correctly, and he refused to drive until he did. At first, he pretended like he didn't hear her, that she wasn't talking to him, despite fellow passengers yelling at him to put it on correctly so the bus would move. "She's talking to you," I chimed in and was within direct eyesight. "I got a medical condition. I can't wear it over my nose," he said. "If you have a medical condition, you shouldn't be on the bus at all," I said. The driver refused to budge, and I said, "We won't be going anywhere until you put it over your nose." "Mind your own business," he said. "This is my business. You're putting your health and the health of everyone else, including me, at risk. I'm not willing to die for your ignorance." "I bet you're a Trump supporter," he threw out, apparently out of sorts. Out of retorts, that is. "Yeah, that's why I'm wearing a mask." Meanwhile, everyone's on the bus is cussing and carrying on. Some of it directed to me, some of it directed to him. "I know somebody who died of this shit, so if you don't want to believe this shit is real, I'll provide details," I yelled out. So, for the third time in a 10-day span, I called the transit authority and filed a complaint. The first time, I no-mask-shamed someone on the bus. The old biddy told me to shut up and mind my own business. Again, I told her when her actions are a threat to my well-being, then it's my business. The driver said nothing until I pointed out she was not wearing her mask, then he finally said something. "I just got in from this," JR says, "but I'm just wondering how long it'll be before me or some other masked shamer will be assaulted or even killed by a mask hole." Ooh. Good word. Or an anti-mask hole. "As for me, I will continue to call out people who threaten my well-being by not wearing a mask during a pandemic. Columbus is the epicenter of the Ohio outbreak. We're closing in on 8,000 official confirmed cases and nearly 400 deaths. We all know it's much more. Governor DeWine held an unscheduled presser this afternoon to confirm the surge of new cases over the past 10 days. All caps. It ain't over, people. Wear your mask. Hope you and yours are well, Bob. I remain a committed no-mask shamer." Or an anti-mask. Right. I have taken, like I said, a different approach. I understand the necessity of calling out people for not wearing them, but if I did that here, I'd never get any shopping done. I just try to stay the fuck away from people as much as I possibly can. If I'm walking past somebody, I hold my breath for at least the next 20 feet. It's scary. But from the "you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar" department, the one thing I am doing is when I see someone wearing a mask, I say, "Hey, thanks for wearing a mask. It means you're intelligent and you care about your community. Thank you." And without fail thus far, my approach has been a success because the people then say, "Thank you. And let's keep setting good examples." So all I can do here is, first and foremost, stay out of church because those people are stupid and prone to spreading disease. See what happened just yesterday at the First Baptist Church of Dallas, or the First COVID Church of Dallas, as the case may be. Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek showed up there. You might recall this is the church that is maintained or is run. It's the personal grift of one Pastor Robert Jeffress. And apparently what Pence's purpose was there, it was supposed to be a celebration of Christian freedom or some such ignorance as that. Sorry, sometimes prayer meeting Wednesday leaks over into Moran Monday. And Titanic Tuesday. Because, well, there's just goddamn many of them. So Mike Pencilneck Geek shows up there. And the stated purpose was one thing, but the real purpose was to anoint him to run for president on the Republican ticket in 2024. One gets the idea that, and remember, he's a minister of the gospel. He's a pastor of a Dallas megachurch. He should not be endorsing anybody, but Jeffress talked about how in 2024, we certainly hope to see Mike Pence's name on the Republican ballot for president, or some such drivel as that. Right. Well, it wouldn't be a Baptist church service if they didn't have the Hallelujah chorus standing there, ready to sing some hosannas. And so, consequently, there were 200 people wearing choir robes, but not masks, ejecting viral particles all over that auditorium. Now, some of the faithful in the audience were wearing masks, but here's the mask thing again. We wear masks to reduce the spread of the virus from those of us who have it out into the world. In other words, if you're wearing a mask, it will keep you from spewing your viral particles at your neighbors. It's not so terribly good at stopping you taking them up. Believe me, I understand this. I don't care if the maggots don't, I do, and it is frightening. So there they were, and of course, ballistics. There's the first COVID Church of Baptist God in Dallas spewing viral particles, their choir, because they won't wear a mask, and there's a bunch of masked people out there, and it's a Baptist church, and it's a mega church, and they're all at risk. But, you know, they had to do it for Jesus, because Jesus loves Mike Pencil Neck Geek. It's exhausting, these morons. It really is. I understand. Kyle says, oh, for fuck's sake, I would rather see the actual devil run for president than Mike Pence. Also noting, Kyle does, ha, 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 wait, it's racist to tell people to wear masks? How's that work? Jesus. Lee in New York, COVID and church, don't worry about the churchgoers. They probably have the air purification system that kills 99.9% of the coronavirus. Yeah, and that squalid, filthy, vermin, virus-infested place in Arizona, those guys have now gotten a cease and desist letters telling them to stop pitching their miracle COVID-killing air filtration system because it's a, what? Yeah, fraud. David in South Carolina, Stan, reminding us, bars are closed in South Carolina, Stan. Yeah, churches are open. So stupid to close bars and not close churches. More viruses spread in church than in bars. But in both cases, people can have their realities altered and lose good control of their inhibitions. But, you know, we got to let people worship because, you know, because Jesus. I know, David. I know. Jeremy in Vermont. And thanks, Jeremy. We're not even fundraising this evening. And Jeremy kicked in. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Jeremy says, I read a post this weekend in which a person posted their reason and source not to or when to wear a mask. Wait for it. The source was their quackropractor. Well, Jeremy says chiropractor. Yeah. Wow. The stupid. It stings. Oh, let's see here. Steve in New York with a question. Let me ask this. Am I the only one who's beginning to wonder if Trump knows or thinks he's going to lose and is just trying to destroy as much as he can? I mean, it seems he and the maggots are only about owning the libs no matter the destruction it wreaks. I've read a number of stories saying that his own advisors are telling him that if he doesn't change shit real quick, he's toast. But the question always becomes one of how much does he actually understand? Because and you know, we've talked about this for months and months, I try really hard not to use the R word because I don't want to hurt anybody with it. But it's terribly difficult to describe what I expert guessed, as Irish Dave would say, what the problem is without saying it. So we found that phrase, intellectual disability, congenital intellectual disability. There is an abundance of evidence from college professors and people who knew him and things like that that suggest that his congenital intellectual disability has been on display all his life. For pity's sake, how do you take a few million dollars that daddy gives you and piss it away and then go back for more? How do you run casinos and go broke? It's almost incomprehensible. And so consequently, when, for instance, we talk about the bounties on American military and coalition military in Afghanistan, and people say it, and you know, the White House, neither he nor Pence were told about it. Bullshit. He was told he's not interested. He was told he is intellectually incapable of processing the information. That's what we're talking about here. And so that's an essential part of any equation when we're talking about what he did or did not know. Randy sent this along. It's a cover from The New Yorker. Trump wearing a mask. Well, because life imitates art, this representation of Trump wearing a mask has him wearing it over his eyes just like the maggot did in the airplane picture. The goddess of irony, I don't know. I think she's just mainlining like double caffeine coffee at this point in time. Meanwhile, another story that Darlene brings to the table, and it earns Marty Baron, the editor of the Washington Post, a Morin Monday nomination. Back when Brett Kavanaugh was in the process of being confirmed, Bob Woodward was on the verge of dropping the dime and burning, as they say, a source. Because Bob Woodward's source during the Starr investigation, you remember the great cleanest hunt, Darlene says, the Guardian, Bob Woodward's story on Kavanaugh's veracity pulled during Senate hearings. Infuriating if true. I was thinking of subscribing to the Washington Post. Maybe I should throw my money to the Guardian instead. The reasons Washington Post and by proxy Bob Woodward gave for not publishing the story that Kavanaugh was the leaker against Clinton when it was relevant, critical, and pertinent are utter bullshit. So why now? So much for concerns about revealing a source. Of course, it would not have changed a thing anyway. I'm under the impression that Chief Justice John Roberts doesn't like Kavanaugh. He doesn't want that spoiled, beer-drinking, shit-weasel upstart having all the power of being a swing vote on the U.S. Supreme Court. Oh no, C.J. Roberts wants the power. Strange times, strange bedfellows. And the bottom line is that Marty Baron, the editor of the Washington Post, quashed quietly a story by Bob Woodward when he was going to out Woodward as his leaker from the Starr investigation. Oh, Brat is a nasty little piece of work, but we already knew that. Among other things, Brat, in addition to the mysterious baseball ticket payoff and the mysterious mortgage payoff and the sexual assault and everything else we found out about him, he was a sex, and you know, you can get this. It would not be the first time it happened to some kid who had come up through Catholic school. You get these really repressed, sexually twisted individuals who are in a state of permanent, outraged titillation over how other people have sex. And so consequently, we have stories out of the Starr investigation about how it was Brat Kavanaugh who wanted to include all of the salacious details of everything they could learn about Bill Clinton's sexuality in the Starr report. To the extent that the Starr report is a nasty little piece of cheap pornography, well, Brat Kavanaugh is at least the partial reason for it. And he was leaking like a sieve to Bob Woodward the whole time. But there's a next level down question to that story as well, and that is, why was Bob Woodward so interested in the salacious details that surrounded that investigation? Because there are no clean hands out of any of that cesspool. Meanwhile, Jeremy says, Bob, stop telling us not to use the R word because you think it hurts people, but how else do you describe non-mask-wearing maggots then as Republicans? Ah! Wasn't the R word I had in mind, but still. Yeah. Subject line mask, a graphic coming from David in South Carolina, Stan, of Vladimir Putin removing a Trump mask from his face. Bob, thank you, says Kyle, for not using the R word. As someone who is considered to be on the autism spectrum, though on the extremely high functioning end, because of the way I act in social situations, I've been called that R word, and it hurts. So thank you for not using it, even when talking about someone so filthy and disgusting as Trump. Precisely why I don't use it, Kyle. But it's extremely frustrating for me as a practitioner, a long-time practitioner of the art of word-knowing, to not have a word to describe somebody. And I'm not talking about the spectrum or anything like that. I'm talking about somebody who was just simply born with a rotten brain for whatever reason. Maybe it's because his mother, Miriam, came from a place where the gene pool was so shallow that a piss ant couldn't drown in it. Maybe that's why. Or maybe it has something to do with the Trump side of the family. Or maybe it's just one of those accidents that takes place in the womb. But I'm absolutely convinced that he ain't right. And that he is malevolently not right. And I think it's the malevolence that makes the difference here. Now, we need a little giggle here. And so I'm going to share with you a brief piece of audio from a guy named Brent Terhune. Mike in Cascadia reminded me of this. I saw this over the weekend, and I did, in fact, get a first-rate giggle out of it. I hope Mr. Terhune will not be offended by this or by my sharing it because, well, I'm just not as funny as he is. And he can be found on Twitter at Brent Terhune, BrentTerhune. This is, as Mike in Cascadia notes, pure genius.
So I just left Walmart, and the whole time I'm in there, everybody's mean mugging me and giving me dirty looks just because I'm not a sheep and I refuse to wear a mask. I got a condition. I was diagnosed with being selfish. I can barely breathe as it is. I'm like a human pug. The only mask I'm wearing is my CPAP machine. They want me to wear a mask and trap in all my CO2, which is bad. I breathe in the oxygen and breathe out the CO2, and it gets trapped in the mask. Next thing you know, I'm breathing in secondhand air and third-hand air. Fourth hand air. Everybody knows the oxygen can get in, but when you breathe out, all that CO2 just gets trapped in, and there's no way on God's flat earth that anything can escape that mask except for
the
coronavirus, which makes the mask pointless in the first place. And all these doctors out here saying, make sure you wear your masks. Well, I went to the University of YouTube, and I graduated MAGA yelled loudly, so they're not the only educated ones out here. That is, if they can make their mind up in the first place, they said, don't wear a mask, then wear a mask. It's like science is willing to change its viewpoint on things when presented with new information. Well, I'm not willing to change, ever. And my friend on Facebook said masks are bad, and he's a doctor. He works for Dr. Scholl's. He works for a store that sells Dr. Scholl's. What I'm trying to say is all these doctors better stop having my best interest at heart because it's tyranny. And I'll wear a mask if I want to. It's my body, my choice, which applies to everybody unless you're a pregnant woman. You people think us maggots are stupid just because we're dumb. Well, I'll tell you one thing we're not, and that's sheep. You can see them leaving Walmart right now. Look, there's one sheep right there, and two sheep, and three sheep, and four
as he falls asleep.
God damn.
I told you it was brilliant. And if you go and find the video on Twitter, there's at least one little Easter egg. He's sitting in his SUV. And there's a stack of boxes behind him, one of which is labeled emotional baggage. I'm telling you, that's quality stuff. Thanks for the reminder, Mike. Mercy. Dave R. says, I'm on the spectrum, official. I find Riri quaint. Trump's got Scots-Irish genes, same as mean hillbillies from his dear mama. Yeah, that when you think about it, that is a hell of a combination. German and Scots-Irish. Going to be trouble. Them's going to be some troublesome white folks. Kyle and I in agreement. The whole thing by Brent Terhune is great, but I graduated MAGA yell loudly. Kyle says, made me do a spit take. Oh, that's great. As to Mr. Terhune, Steve in New York says, I got more than a giggle. I done lolled. Steve, meanwhile, also adds, I'd like to make a motion to award him an honorary cowbell. Do I hear a second? I'll second that. Hearing no objections, cowbell awarded. Yes, indeed. And Jeremy noting, God's green flat earth is a cowbell unto itself. Lo, in his monologue are many cowbells. Jude caught the flat earth too. That was quality. Oh, where else to go? Now, we all know that Texas, the single most uninsured state in the union, Texas has more than, well, Texas is on fire. Because of people like, the Lieutenant Governor of that state, Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick, among other things, well, I'm looking for the exact statement here. It was Dan Patrick, Lieutenant Governor of Texas, who said that older Americans needed to be willing to die for the economy. We gave that extensive coverage here. And he's terrible. And he's part and parcel of why Texas is in the horrible shape it's in. I think it was CNN that toured a hospital in Houston. Houston is now at 100% of its capacity to deal with the disease and climbing. And so when the warning went out, Dan Patrick had something to say. It was actually Friday when he said, for those who live in the greater Houston area and just received Lena Hidalgo's emergency alert, it is over the top. During these serious times, we need calm leaders, not panic alerts that scare people. Well, he, the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, is a living, breathing vector of the disease. He wants people to be calm in a situation that he personally, alongside his aider and abettor and boss, Greg Abbott, made worse. immensely worse. And so now we get down to an interview between representing Dan Crenshaw and Brian Kilmeade of Fox and Fiends, wherein they try to explain away the current massive outbreak in Texas. And, of course, it's not a Republican's fault. You, surely to God, you know whose fault it is. Mm-hmm. Those people. Them.
But we're going to get through this. It's a virus without a vaccine. We always knew this kind of thing would happen, especially when we had tens of thousands of people in the streets just a couple weeks ago. Okay, this shouldn't have, just should have surprised no one.
Over 300 cities, 300 plus cities, had some type of rioting, looting, protests happening. How do people...
Funny how the it's rioting, looting, protesting, when in fact, the numbers are the exact opposite. Protesting, rioting, looting. Things like this matter, especially if you're Emery and Marvelline sitting there in the matching Barca loungers watching this shit day in and day out. It's like a form of hypnosis, really. Rioting, looting, protesting. Here's the interesting part, though. Some science is coming in. The protesters went into the streets and took their IQs with them. Because I think it's safe to say at this point that COVID-19, well, it's mutated. It started out as a virus, and it has, in fact, mutated into an IQ test. And so the protesters, the Black Lives Matter protesters taking to the streets, took their masks with them. And we do know a little bit more about outside spread versus indoor spread, about things like recirculated air. And so the spikes are not coming from people who were outside protesting. I was worried as hell about it. I continue to worry. But no, to the extent that any contact tracing is being done, what we're finding out is that the people who are spreading the fucking disease are the people who go bobbing around on a lake, asshole to belly button, in places like Missouri and Georgia, Arkansas. We're going tubing! Woo! Get some beer! And the people who sit around church and spew all over each other. But not so much from the protests. But God forbid there should be any facts involved when Maggoty Dan and Maggoty Brian get together on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. It's the black people's fault.
People not link those two. In fact, I've seen reports saying no proof that the riots in the streets and the protests led to the rise of coronavirus. You'd have to suspend logic to think that.
Yeah, don't believe your lying eyes. Everybody wants...
Yeah, only it's not your lying eyes. The lying is taking place right there in that program. Because there is data. And you don't have to suspend disbelief. In fact, belief need not be involved whatsoever. In fact, in the places where we're experiencing it, the greatest outbreak are the places where people have not taken it seriously ever. They're still flattening the curve in New York, in Massachusetts, in Connecticut, in New Jersey. Sure, there are some screw-ups out there, people out drinking on the streets of New York and on a sunny day over a pretty weekend. But people are still taking it seriously because there's a higher number of people with higher IQs there. Alabama, not so much. Georgia, not so much. Florida, not so much. Texas, not so much. Arizona, oh my God. Sorry, Arizona. Sorry, Suman and Jerry. Yeah, sorry. Don't mean y'all. And we only think we're relatively okay here because our numbers are dodgy. Because we've got Donald Trump's Maxi-Me.
I shall call him Maxi-Me.
In the form of Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. As Steve in New York notes, not only masks at the protest, but they generally socially distanced. If you look from above, you can see it. Well, I mean, I remember seeing it at ground level on the first night of the protest in Minneapolis. Note coming in from Dave number 11 regarding remdesivir. Gilead Health, the ironically named Gilead Health, announcing today that they figured to charge about $2,300 for a 5-day course of remdesivir treatment in a hospital. That's what Dave number 11 is writing about. The local hospital was involved in the remdesivir trial. In a small sample size, they had no fatalities due to COVID-19, whether given remdesivir or not. Gilead now gets to bring the government's funded and researched antiviral to market exclusively as a treatment for the Rona. Naturally, Gilead's CEO said that a 5-day course of remdesivir will cost private health insurers in the U.S. $3,120 and will cost governments of developed nations, including the U.S., $2,340. It costs $10 to make. Dave continues, I'm in a favorable position as spouse number 11 is deemed a critical need caregiver, and since we share living space, we both go to the front of the line when the coronavirus darkens our doorstep. Even at the age of 60, we'll get the best chance to make it through the ordeal. But the fate of the rest of America, now that we've abandoned trying to flatten the curve, I dread what is about to happen. By the way, asks Dave, do you think this administration is going to buy the population of the USA 330 million courses of remdesivir? That's not no, Dave. That's hell no. Because there's too many of that 330 million who are not loyal maggots. And as I keep trying to point out, we are in the weaponized stage. Maybe it would help if I used a different voice. We're in the weaponized stage of this pandemic. Now, go over to my website and buy some paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage. When we come back, we'll talk about the monkey jellyfish hybrids for sale in the bazaars of Old Kowloon. This is the Alex Jones Show. Prison Planet. InfoWars. Now, I don't think I could do that for 3 hours. But we are in the weaponized phase of this pandemic. In years past, I'd see people from not from around here. And I'd say, hey, welcome to West Virginia. We're glad you're here. Enjoy your time here. Learn a little bit about our history. Learn a little bit about who we are. Learn what's been done to us. Learn what's going on still. And then I do my mountaintop removal missionary work. Now I see those out-of-staters, and the first thing that comes to mind is, go the fuck home! It happened Saturday. I was out getting stuff for brining that aforementioned pork loin. And so I was down to the Dollar General. So in front of me in line was a woman wearing a mask who had a not from around here kind of accent. And she was asking the clerk about where she might find a tow truck. And so, keeping our social distance and both of us wearing our masks, I said, quick as I'm done checking out, I'll help you. And I found her a few wrecker services. It turns out that she and her husband and teenage son were on their way back home from vacation. The husband was wearing a sweatshirt that said Wrightsville Beach. And they had locked themselves out of their RV. I can't imagine they were coming through Fayette County from Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina. Maybe. But it didn't make a lot of sense when I said, so where are you from? They said, Georgia. I took a few steps back. And I said, y'all got a real mess on your hand. They said, yeah. I said, you don't know? I said, COVID-19's going through the roof down there. Because of that god-awful governor you have. And mirabile dictu, the guy looks at me and says, ain't that the truth? He's terrible. He ain't done nothing but make matters worse. I said, yep. And when he dies, he's so crooked they'll have to screw him into the dirt. And he laughed sardonically and said, you just said a mouthful of truth, brother. Thanks for helping. I got in my car and drove away, and I hope they're all right. But, you know, for folks down in Georgia Stan way, like our buddy Steve from Georgia Stan and Hung Like Jesus and Reggie, please know you're not alone. They weren't wearing any maggot stuff, and they were downright normal-ish. Now, there's a comparison for you. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Imagine if you will. Imagine if you will. I grew up during the polio epidemic in the 50s. Imagine how many people would have contracted the disease if this bunch of money-grubbing scumbags had been in charge. Yeah. Or the flu pandemic of 1969. Because there was one, you know. These people are toxic. They're killers. And they're hell-bent, people like Maggot Dan Crenshaw and Maggot Brian Kilmeade. At the very least, white supremacist adjacent assholes, if not outright.
Wants to say it was a few people hanging out at bars that caused this. That's not true. Listen, Texas has been reopening since May 1st. Okay, we've been getting back to normalcy since May 1st, and everything was declining as a result. Cases were declining.
Yeah, no, they weren't. Because there is, you know, if you start on May 1st, you're not going to see the front end of the spike until May 14th. And that's if you're testing adequately and appropriately, which Texas wasn't. And so we're seeing now the consequences of a bunch of smollicking and larping and grabbelating going on in Texas since May 1st.
This spike's happened after tens of thousands of people got together in close proximity. There's nothing wrong with saying that. That's just the truth, and we're just...
Well, no, there is something wrong with it when it is a bald-faced lie, you maggot dirtbag. And he doesn't get a pass because he lost an eye in Iraq or Afghanistan or where the hell ever. He supports a president who sat on knowledge that our military was in Afghanistan with bounties on their heads. And here's the thing, the soldiers in Afghanistan and the intel community knew it in January. They knew on the ground. And they were waiting for somebody to do something. And the only something that anybody did was, well, Donald Trump just sent some ventilators to Russia. God almighty.
Dealing with it now, it's not about blaming anybody. It's just about being honest with causes and effects.
Yeah, well, yeah. So much for all that vaunted honesty. The truth ain't in him. And there's so much of this. Oh, God, we're filthy with it. Another maggot came out today. Trying to blame the New York Times for Trump's treason. And treason is a word that I do not throw around casually. What he has done with regard to the bounty, the Russian bounty, on our military is unconscionable and unforgivable. So naturally, enter representing Jim Banks, a maggot from Talibandiana. He called the New York Times report, which has subsequently been confirmed by the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the ABC News, NBC News, and Sky News, to name but a few. He blamed the New York Times for running, quote, a hit piece falsely accusing Trump of ignoring reports that Russia placed bounties on American soldiers in Afghanistan. Here's the fundamental problem with all of this. The White House itself has not denied the bounties. They have merely tried to say that, oh, gosh, I mean, we can't expect the president of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, and forever under God, to know everything about what's going on in the world. But Jim Banks ran up the bloody shirt. Having served in Afghanistan during the time the alleged bounties were placed, no one is angrier about this than me. Well, how about some of the people who were dead from those bounties? Could their families be angrier about that than you, Jim? Now it's impossible to finish the investigation. All because the New York Times will do anything to damage Donald Trump and tagged him in it so that Trump could know that Jim Banks had his... head squarely up Trump's fundament. Even if it means compromising national security, sad, but many in the media and Congress rushed to judgment before learning the whole story. We should treat anonymously sourced New York Times stories about Russia with skepticism. Here's a fact, no president in my lifetime has been tougher on Russia than at real Donald Trump. No, really, I'm getting my head up there. Look, I'm past my ears now, my God and Savior. Fucking asshole. Because here's the thing. He tweeted all that shit after he came out of a White House meeting. A briefing. That only included Republicans. What's that he said? It's impossible to finish the investigation. Many in media and Congress rushed to judgment. But no Democrats were welcome. That's where we are. Clinton always invited the Republicans. W invited the Democrats. Obama invited the Republicans. HW invited the Democrats. Reagan invited the Democrats. Carter invited the Republicans for these sorts of briefings. Because the theory was you put country ahead of party. Well, country ahead of party is a corpse laying out behind a dumpster somewhere in the heat. How do you live with yourself when you're a Jim Banks? And every time you look in the mirror, you know, I'm not even a man anymore. I'm a thing. A creature. Regardless, His petulant hissy did not withstand scrutiny. Asha Rangappa took him apart piece by piece. University of Texas law professor Stephen Vladek queried as to how Jim Banks could claim there was an ongoing investigation after the White House had said that the story was fake. Asking particularly congressmen if there's been a secret month-long investigation into the bounties, why did the White House spend all weekend denying any knowledge of the whole episode? Susan Hennessy used to work for the Office of General Counsel of the National Security Agency. She said, how can you claim that Trump's being rough on Russia when he just asked him to rejoin the G7? May have to send my magic eight ball to Asha Rangappa because she made a prediction. She said that instead of the White House actually giving a fuck about attacks on our military, bounty hunter attacks, that instead she expects Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr to launch an investigation into who might have leaked the information. Which would, to be fair, be entirely in character for this bunch of footpads, cut purses, pickpockets, highwaymen, lick spittles, and sycophants. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't take a moment to at least acknowledge history. Because history is a thing that in the ancient world had its very own muse. And so partook of the sacred. What do I mean by that? This. As far back as the 19th century, back when the sun never set on the British Empire, as they said. There was a near constant state of conflict and skullduggery taking place in what we know as Afghanistan, which included the Hindu Kush. There's a wonderful film out there that doesn't have any particular bearing on our situation, but it is a wonderful film nonetheless, drawn from a Rudyard Kipling story. Michael Caine and Sean Connery, Christopher Plummer, I believe, The Man Who Would Be King, about a couple of guys who decide that they're just going to go and set themselves up as royalty in a far and distant corner of Afghanistan. That's neither here nor there, except to say that the Russians and the British were constantly maneuvering against each other in that particular tormented portion of the world. And the maneuvering and the killing that went on in typical white supremacist fashion was referred to as the Great Game. The Great Game. Britain eventually got out of the Great Game. Russia never really did. And in the power vacuum created by the exit of Great Britain, the UK, the United States stepped in. And it all came to a head in the late 70s and 80s as the USSR attempted to set up a Soviet client state in Kabul. And let's be clear about a couple of things here. One of the things that happened when they set up that client state was they attempted to maintain some degree, because it was a, you know, it was a big deal with the USSR back then, to have gender equality, or what they perceived it to be. In the Second World War, that meant that women marched in the Red Army and killed with as much alacrity as did their male counterparts. Women worked in factories. And in fact, at mid-century in the 20th century, there had been a bit of an enlightened expansion of women's rights in a place like Afghanistan, which the Soviets, tried to build upon at the same time that they put in a dictatorial, repressive, Russian-style communist regime. This, of course, coincides with the rise of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, that greasy-headed B-movie actor, racist, who went into office on the promise that he was going to create a massive military buildup and confront the Soviets. And so wherever the Soviets were, whoever they were working for, we were besties with whomever they were working against. And so, not to overly belabor the history, many of us know this. Maybe some of the younger members of the Horn Family Community Congregation aren't quite as conversant, but I'm sure you know something about it. Building on the vile behavior of people like Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. Augusto Pinochet, anyone? Ronald Reagan and people like John Negroponte and other of that band of swine that would be wrapped up in Iran-Contra and then get a new lease on life and money under W. Bush in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, we became besties in places like El Salvador and Nicaragua, in Guatemala and Honduras, with the filthiest of fascist death squads and murderers. Not only, and we were such besties with them that we even built a school and sent them to it to teach them how to be even more ruthless and rapacious, and we called it the School of the Americas. And that's how we taught the El Salvadoran death squads how to do El Salvadoran death squad stuff. And so, having been weren't real good, they went back home, murdered and raped nuns, assassinated an archbishop, Oscar Romero, and made those lands run red with blood for a decade or more. And in some instances, it still continues. Well, we did the same thing in Afghanistan. If anybody's ever seen Charlie Wilson's War, of course, thoroughly Hollywoodized. But Reagan found himself an ally in a conservative Democratic congressman from Texas named Charlie Wilson. And he used that bipartisanship to funnel horse gagging, elephant gagging, whale gagging wads of money into Afghanistan in support of a group of dangerous fundamentalist right-wing thugs that Reagan praised as freedom fighters and who called themselves the Mujahideen. Now, a lot of Mujahideen got shot up, blown up, burned up, tortured. And a relief organization was set up for Mujahideen veterans who could no longer fight. It was headed up by the son of a Saudi construction magnate by the name of Osama bin Laden. And necessarily, the CIA also took care of his tormented veterans, wounded, maimed, injured veterans. And the group that was taking care of those veterans, Mujahideen veterans, was given a name. They were simply called the Base. Translated into High Arabic, we know that today as Al-Qaeda. Yeah, really. Al-Qaeda was born out of Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself's, desire to be a persistent thorn in the side of the Soviet Union as it tried to maintain its grip on Afghanistan. And we bled them. God Almighty, we bled them. The CIA had some of the best fun the CIA has ever had, arming and training the Mujahideen And we're not talking about sending them a few wooden crates of, old leftover Vietnam rifles. Fuck no. We sent them goddamn weapons that could take out aircraft, heat-seeking missiles and the like. There's a big scene in Charlie Wilson's War where, having learned how to use anti-aircraft shoulder-mounted missiles, the Mujahideen take down a Soviet troop transport helicopter, killing everybody aboard. Now, to the best of my knowledge, maybe it's still classified, who knows? To the best of my knowledge, we never actually offered bounties. We never offered if you kill a Soviet soldier, we'll give you a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. We didn't do that. We just made sure that they had everything necessary to slaughter as many Soviet troops as they could. And, when we're talking about grunts, grunts are grunts the whole world over. Nationality matters not. As often as not, you're some poor bastard who's been taken from some godforsaken, poverty-infested area of your country, either as a volunteer or as a conscript, and sent off to fight some rich man's war. Hence the old saying, poor man's fight, rich man's war. And so we paid the Mujahideen to slaughter as many Soviet soldiers as we could. That's just the reality. We actually did far more in our support of the Mujahideen than the Soviets have done, or the Russians have done in this instance with us. We know now that there are flag-draped coffins that came home from Afghanistan as a result of the bounties placed upon their heads. But it's not so much, hey, there's Joe Smith, we'll give you $500 and a goat if you kill Joe Smith. It's kill American soldiers. Kill coalition soldiers, which is precisely what we told the Mujahideen to do. Now, please don't take anything that I'm saying as a tacit acceptance of this particular present moment of bald-faced and unmitigated treason. Because this much is true. We knew what we were doing in Afghanistan. The Mujahideen knew what we were doing in Afghanistan. And the Soviets damned well knew what we were doing in Afghanistan because, among other things, the Mujahideen didn't have any Stinger missile factories. I offer all this only for the sake of perspective. And with a postscript, a reminder that for those of us who are anti-war, it is cold comfort, but we can say that not one single American life need have been lost in Afghanistan. It was always one of those things that kind of made me cringe when I would hear Barack Obama when he was on the stump. Because in 2008, he would go around and say, "We have got to get out of Iraq. Iraq was the wrong war. But as I have always said, I have always believed that Afghanistan was the right war." No, it wasn't. There is no war that a country starts that is a right war. And don't count on me for that. Go back to, who is it? St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, I don't give a fuck. Who came up with this notion of just war theory, which theoretically Western governments claim to adhere to. And that is, you never attack someone unless they attack you first. Well, the tissue paper thin casus belli that we used in Afghanistan was, well, I mean, there was Al-Qaeda there, and that's where they plant the 9/11 attacks. You know, whenever it was that the Bush administration wasn't howling that Saddam Hussein had done it. There's that. But in point of fact, the reason, wow, 19 years ago this September, this October. The reason we attacked Afghanistan was because we said, Osama bin Laden is in your country. You got to give him up. You got to give him to us. And we all too easily forget that the Taliban responded, we'll give him up. We will gladly hand him over to the World Court at The Hague. The International Criminal Court. But W said, no. We want him. We want to eat him. We're going to barbecue him alive in downtown Manhattan. We all going to have a bite. And that is why we attacked Afghanistan. Because the Afghan government actually wanted to abide by international treaties that we didn't care for. And that led us to being in Afghanistan. So while Donald J. Trump, the J stands for traitor, while he is responsible for turning a blind eye to an actual overt bounty being placed on American heads in Afghanistan, you really can't have a proper handle on the whole bloody mess if you don't acknowledge everything that led up to that moment. All we had to do was not get into that quagmire, and we wouldn't be having this conversation now. Isn't that true? But this is an administration unlike any other in this country's history. They will brazen it out. They will brass through it. Nixon would have resigned over this. I remain confident in that. This would have shamed, if not caused the resignation, of W. And as you can see from the behavior of people like the aforementioned maggot from Indiana, they're going to brazen this one out too. Despite the fact that Liz Dick in a Bad Wig Cheney is calling for a complete airing of the facts about this, alongside Nancy Pelosi. And it is wholly impossible for Nitwit Nero not to have known about this. As Darlene in Connecticut points out, do you know what the intelligence community puts into the president's daily briefing? There is absolutely no excuse for Trump not to have known and not to have had plenty of options presented to, by the IC and available to him to address it. Trump is a coward. And with John Ratcliffe as DNI now, Director of National Intelligence, you could not ask for an even bigger coward. We are in such deep shit. I read a tweet earlier today from a former secretary to the National Security Council who remarked that with all documents presented to the president, they have a stamp. Seen by POTUS. So, if, and all of those things are protected by the Presidential Records Act. So, at least in theory, there should be a paper trail in which the documents will speak for themselves. Assuming that on January the 20th, 2017, the incoming maggots didn't simply lose that rubber stamp. In a functioning constitutional republic, this would trigger an immediate impeachment inquiry. This is not a functioning constitutional republic. Once again, Jerry Nadler's words ring true. There's no point. Because the Senate of the United States is as or more disloyal to the Constitution of the United States than is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a self-centered, self-serving ignoramus. All of the Republican senators aren't. Tom Cotton of Arkansas runs up the bloody shirt every chance he gets. Ben Sasse of Nebraska, a new and different kind of Republican. Constantly tries to appear hip and young. Mitch McConnell, Chinless Mitch. I don't know how that mask's going to fit, but Chinless Mitch actually, you know, 126,000 dead people too late, said, you know, I've decided maybe we need to start wearing masks and not give people shit about it. But that will not take us up to and including 67 Senate votes to remove that little bastard from office. And that's just a fact. Note coming in from Suman on the Mujahideen. One more point to note, Bob. The same people trained in Afghanistan came over to Kashmir and to this day continue to propagate terrorism in the Indian subcontinent. Afghanistan is truly the land that ends empires. Yeah. You know why, Suman? Hillbillies. I don't care where you are. Hillbillies is hillbillies is hillbillies. And an argument can be made that to the extent that they end empires, they were a persistent pain in the ass to the Persians. They were the cause of Alexander overstretching himself in his expeditions. The Romans had good enough sense to stop with the Parthians. The Islamic armies got in there long enough to impose Islam, but the various caliphates that ruled subsequently learned the hard way to just kind of ignore those fuckers. And then you get the Ottomans, and you get the British, and the Russians, and hey, us. Yeah, thank you, Flavio. Just war doctrine is Thomas Aquinas. Treason, says Steve in New York. A foreign country has waged war on us by seeking to kill our troops while on the battlefield. The president is denying it and giving that country cover, a.k.a. aid and comfort. Don't we finally have a definable commission of treason? One would think. There's a caveat to all of this, though. Because while treason is the only crime that is actually defined in the Constitution, it's also actually codified in the U.S. Code. So if you want to play, and I'm not directly speaking to Steve on this, but if you want to play lawyer games and do the parsing and these are the elements and the ABCs of treason, you got to go to the U.S. Code. And that will give you a better idea. Me? I think it's treason. Very few people are buying the notion that Trump knew nothing about what was going on. Oh, no. No, no. Because, well, the evidence works against him. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty said, on March 30th, Russian leader Vladimir Putin and U.S. President Donald Trump spoke by telephone, the first of five calls between the two over a period of 3 weeks, a flurry of communication unprecedented during Trump's 3.5 years in office. Only one of those five calls was shared with the public. Over at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Mike Eckel said, for many Russia watchers, the flurry of behind-the-scenes phone calls and other communications is a clear indication that something's going on. Diplomats between the two countries were busily talking to each other. And somehow or another, readouts of calls between nitwit Nero and huggable, cuddleable, lovable, wouldn't hurt a flea, big bad Vladdy Daddy, well, they don't want those to see the light of day. And in fact, not a single readout of a single call between Trump and any foreign leader has been posted to the White House website for public access. Probably because back last September 2019, the Kremlin gave orders And they said no calls between Trump and Putin could be made public without mutual accord. And so if Vlad says it, puppet Donnie does it. Truly, he is a Cataline for our times. Randy, in PA. Strange how the Mujahideen became the Taliban. Strange or, you know, not. Nothing like helping birth a movement. And see, Osama bin Laden was completely okay with Mirka. I mean, we were a bunch of infidels and heretics, of course. But it was a clear case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so we were Osama bin Laden's friend. All the way up until Bush War I, when Pappy Bush put American troops on sacred Saudi sand. This was something up with which the mightily pious Osama bin Laden would not put. And in fact, when he sent us the letter saying, here's why I took down your trade towers, he told us, get the fuck out of Saudi Arabia. That's why we did this. And then W tucked his tail between his legs and got our troops off sacred Saudi sand. There you go. Jack asks, did the Taliban include the requirement of getting our bases out of Holy Land during that first turnover to the Hague? Or did some of the other requests, which we ended up giving them anyway later, not enter into Bush's initial refusal? Maybe those were never formalized demands? Yeah, well, I mean, there were a lot of things going on. In May of 2001, before September 11th, 2001, W welcomed a contingent of Taliban to the White House to thank them for their efforts in eradicating Afghan poppy production. It is said that it was during those meetings that Republican officials told the Taliban that they wanted to do some deal making, that there was some oil in the Caspian Sea basin that they wanted to get to the Indian Ocean, and they wanted the Taliban's cooperation for a pipeline. And what was reported at the time was that they told the Afghans, we will give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. The get your ass off sacred Saudi sand came directly from Osama bin Laden. Now, there's an interesting thought. Steve in New York. Donnie's calls with Putin. I will guarantee you that the Mossad, MI6, and any number of other intelligence agencies have those transcripts. And so, of course, does Mother Russia. Right? Sure. There you go, Todd in South Carolina stand pointing out Wahhabi equals hillbilly. Well, no, not so fast, because the Wahhabis are in Saudi Arabia. They're the personal religious police enforcer force of the noble, puissant, majestic, high, gracious House of Ibn Saud. What you've got in Afghanistan are a different brand of badass radical Sunnis, which is why they hate the almighty fuck out of people like Iran, because they're Shia. And the difference between Shia and Sunni is by no stretch of the imagination anything like the difference between, say, Lutherans and Presbyterians. No. And yes, Jack, you're right. On the hillbillies issue, and because my geography and memory are not so good, there's lots of mining going on in that there neck of the woods as far as precious metals goes. Not just precious metals, rare earth elements. How much of the mining land or roads in and out of mining land are the hillbilly part of Afghanistan? Well, almost all of Afghanistan is the hillbilly part of Afghanistan. And secondly, I reported on it on this program years ago when the New York Times published a piece, I think it was, pointing out that, yes, vast deposits of rare earth elements had been discovered in Afghanistan. And I said then, we ain't leaving. Because if we walk out, that means China moves in and they get the goodies. So far, it appears I've been correct. And speaking of the Saudis, because at least this has a little bit of comic value, there was a punk job went on over the weekend. In which Sacha Baron Cohen showed up at a rally for freedom or whatever, being run by the neo-Nazi white supremacists in Olympia, Washington. Now, the dumbass maggot neo-Nazi white supremacists didn't realize that when a PAC in Southern California started offering to pay for things, that there might be strings attached. There's like, hoo-wee, Gatlin Brothers is going to play. Hot damn! But it turns out Sacha Baron Cohen was behind it, who showed up on stage for a sing-along in one of his more creative, I thought, disguises. Dressed like somebody from round here. A little extra padding, stupid straw hat, some overalls, and a reddish-pink shirt. Looked like something that might have been an undershirt for, a Confederate soldier. And he started into singing. Hilarity ensued. Because you'll notice that in the sing-along, he gets the assembled white supremacists to, well, of course, sing along with him.
In the jails, Obama, what we gotta do? Inject him with the Wuhan flu. Inject him with the Wuhan.
I got to tell you, that's a quality little band behind him. Got a mandolin player is just chopping away, and a decent bass player, and a pretty respectable fiddle player. Did you hear the woo-hoo out in the audience when he said,
Obama, what we going to do? Inject him with the Wuhan flu? Did you hear the woo? Yeah.
Okay, this is the chorus. I'm going to say what we do, and you're going to say inject him with the Wuhan flu. You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Obama, what we going to do? Inject him with the Wuhan flu. Inject him with the Wuhan flu. Come on. Hillary Clinton, what we going to do? Knock her up like we used to do. Like we used to do. Let's hope that much. Fauci, don't throw his head from his ass. He must be smoking grass. We got knocked down by a flu.
In case you missed it, Fauci, he don't know a mask from his ass. He must be smoking grass. And that got a hoot.
I ain't lying, it ain't no jokes. Corona is a liberal hoax. Corona is a liberal hoax. What we gonna do then? Dr. Fauci, what we gonna do?
Inject him with the Wuhan flu.
Inject him with the Wuhan flu. Come on. WHO, what we gonna do? Chop him up like the Saudis do. Chop him up like the Saudis.
WHO, what are we going to do? Chop them up like the Saudis do. And again, they're still hooting and hollering.
What we're going to do to WHO, we're going to inject them with the Wuhan flu. Or chop them up like the Saudis do. Okay, let's hear. Who wants to inject them with the Wuhan flu?
Yeah.
Who wants to chop them up like the Saudis do?
Yeah.
Chop them up like the Saudis do. Okay, you ready? WHO, what we gonna do? Chop them up like the Saudis do. WHO, what we gonna do? Chop them up like the Saudis do. WHO, what we gonna do? Now, ladies, let's hear the ladies. Hold on. Right, here we go. WHO, what we gonna do? Ladies, what happened to the whole Me Too era? Let's hear you shout. WHO, what you gonna do? Can't hear you, girls. Saudis do. Come on, ladies, now.
Them poor maggot women sounds like they can't decide. Chop them up like the Wuhan flu? Then again, I don't know. Maybe they were in Olympia, Washington. Maybe they were drinking some of that, too much of that Olympia beer, what's made by them artesians.
Dr. Fauci, what we gonna do? Chop them up like a Saudis do. Chop them up like a Saudis do. That's it for the guys now, okay? So let's see if you're louder than the girls. Here we go. WHO, what we gonna do? Chop them up like a Saudis do. WHO, what we gonna do?
They can learn.
Yeah. What we gonna do to Fauci? Jump him up. Here we go. You ready for another one? USA is the best. We don't need no COVID test. You're not gonna take away my rights. I don't care about your race. Take that mask off for your commie face. Take the mask off your Wearers, what we gonna do? Inject them with the Wuhan flu.
terror. Action, shall we lock them up? Shall we lock them up like we used to? You want to lock them up like we used to, though? Or do you want to inject them with the Wuhan flu? Wuhan flu or lock them up? Okay, mask wearers. Mask wearers, what you gonna do? With the Wuhan flu.
Marvelina, I'm confused. Is he saying mosque wearers or mask wearers? Are we talking about the Muslims, or are we talking about the people what wears the masks? I don't. It almost sounds like he ain't from around here. He dropped his accent. Mosque wearers, mosque. Really, really, Sasha, you posh son of a gun, you. Now, the point here is, and you've heard 4 minutes and 53 seconds of it. And it's a greatest hits of right-wing bigotry and xenophobia. Later on, there'll be some singing about nuking the Chinese like we used to do. Yeah. And the thing is, you've heard 4 minutes and 53 seconds of it. It goes on for 8 minutes and 24 seconds, the whole clip. And you hear them. They're hooting and they're hollering. They're into it. They're having fun. Because they're getting their hate on, which is what qualifies as fun for your average garden variety white supremacist Nazi scumbag like this. But eventually it all fell apart. Sacha Baron Cohen had to know it would. And that's when you get this groovy shirt and vest and tie and matching pants wearing bearded Nazi dude like they have out there. And he wants it. They caught on to it right away. 8 minutes and 43 seconds. But they caught on to it right away. And there was a reason that they couldn't stop him. A reason.
Austin was contacted about 72 hours ago by a group called Back to Work USA out of Orange County, California. They wanted to bring in a couple of bands, have some music, give us a nice stage, set it up, amp it a little bit better. It felt a little weird, but they started paying for stuff like porta potties, stage rentals, barriers.
Yeah, they paid for stuff. And that's all it takes for your general dirtbag, scumbag, filthy Nazi white supremacist asshole. What, you got some money? I like money. Start playing for porta potties. They're going to bring in a couple good bands.
And as of this morning, we had two bands, the band that opened and the band that's closing right now with the Gatlin Brothers. Well, the second band started playing their set, and about halfway into a set, or where I'd expect them to be about done, they started into an incredibly racist song. At that moment, we realized that our organizers were nowhere to be found, the ones that had contracted and paid for stuff.
That's another way of saying we realized we'd been punked within an inch of our lives because we're dumbass dirtbag, scumbag, white supremacist, racist Nazis.
As one of the organizers, we tried to pull the plug. They had four armed security on the generator, so we couldn't even cut the power.
Wait. No. Time out, Jack, okay? Time out. Sacha Baron Cohen had four people with guns guarding the generator so they couldn't pull the power. Okay, sure. Why not? Now, these are bully boys. These are brown shirts. These are proud boys and 3%ers and they're going to fight the coming race war in Merca. And assuming that these four armed guards around the generator even existed, they couldn't overcome them? What?
They couldn't pull the plug? Damnedest thing, that electricity. Maybe Sparky could help with this. Is there only one place you can cut the power coming from a generator? I mean, a generator generally has an extension cord coming off of it. And they've only got four armed guys around the generator. How about going up to where the band is and pulling the plug there? Jesus. To paraphrase the wisdom of Yosemite Sam, 3 percenters is so stupid. But the fact of the matter is, it went on for 8.5 minutes. And for a while there, they was just a little too busy toe-tapping and singing about, journalists, what we gonna do? Chop them up like the Saudis do. Because that was in there, too. Yeah.
We tried to get on the stage to kick the band off. They had all of the security that was around the stage was then blocking us from getting access to the stage. They wouldn't let us pass the barrier.
Oh, poor little Nazis. The security wouldn't let them pass the barrier. Oh, no wonder they couldn't get to pull the plug up there at the bandstand. Doggone it. Outsmarted again.
Despite us having our backstage passes that were issued to us.
Wait, they had their backstage passes and they wouldn't honor the backstage passes? Oh, those poltroons!
All of the security turned on us. We bum-rushed them, got through the security, unplugged the mic, got the guy off the stage. They jumped into the staged AMR ambulance back here. And
wait, they got the guy off the stage, but they didn't try to... Wait, what?
Took off with lights and sirens on to get out of here.
Yeah.
The whole band did. And security. They were gone immediately. There's no security left here. And we're left with Mr. Larry Gatlin asking, what's going on? I thought this was a conservative constitutional group.
Well, Larry Gatlin, if you were asking that question, old fella, you must be Atne Ute Aitbre, as we say around here. Because there's hardly anybody in this country that doesn't know that the 3 percenters are a bunch of fucking white supremacist, racist Nazis who go around starting fights and trying to infiltrate the military and the law enforcement of this country. Ah, funny that way. Yeah, how about that? Doggone it. Darndest thing. A reminder coming in from somebody who's paid attention to all the lyrics. Our pal over on Twitter, O Pipe Down. Or my favorite line, throw them to the bears like the Chechens do. Catchy. I agree. But they ran away in an ambulance. They did. In an ambulance.
And they spent a lot of money. I'm going to blame this on the Democratic Party. Spent a lot of money. Thank you, Jay Inslee, to make us look bad because of the last two things. And I bet you if you follow the strings, this goes directly back to our Washington State Democratic Party.
Yeah, no, dumbass. It goes back to the wallet of Sacha Baron Cohen's production company because you guys are what are generally referred to as low-hanging fruit. It was easy because, again, 3 percenters is so stupid. Oh, it goes back to Jay Inslee. Right, we got to pull those strings. It goes right back to the Democratic Party. I don't think so. Mm-mm. No, I think this is going to go on somebody's accounting sheet as cost of doing business. Production costs.
Yep. So we need to start pulling strings. All right, we used Island Johnny's porta potties. They were contracted and paid for by this organization. We need to have some funding done on that. We need to look into the barrier company. We need to look into the stage company. We need to look into everybody here, the AMR contract for the ambulance. We need to know where this money came from so we can tie it back to Jay Inslee, because this is not a representation of our values.
Yeah, so we can tie it back to Jay Inslee. Yeah. Oh, man, they're always the last to know, aren't they, the stupid 3%er Nazis? Yeah, we're going to get this back to Jay Inslee. Funny. Jay Inslee's a guy in his mid to upper 60s and looks to a surprising degree like, apparently, Sacha Baron Cohen. And here's the best and funniest part of it all, really. After all that business about rushing off in an ambulance, a few minutes later, Sacha Baron Cohen was back in a different disguise, all fuzzy and beardy and carrying a camera like he was one of those hippie freak-looking video camera journalists. Didn't catch him then either. I'd say the coming race war revolution in this country is in a bad way. And the fact that these are white supremacists, well, that whole white supremacy thing's not working out too well now, is it? Yep. God, I love it. Jack in Shreveport noting 3%ers. The dude says, this isn't part of our values. True. Comedy and a sense of humor ain't in no way part of those people's makeup. Yeah, they're about as funny as a flat tire. Yeah, some similar things dawning on Steve in New York. Wait a sec. This is their event, yet they don't know who paid for any of that? Well, I mean, that PAC from Orange, California put America back to work. They paid for it. So all you got to do is create a PAC with a nice right-wingy sounding name, and they'll go after the worm, swallow, bite the hook, and then swallow it all the way down to the depths of their innards. I agree, Flavio. You got to give Sacha Baron Cohen props. He's brilliant. He's made a career out of punking people who are, I guess, too stupid not to be punked. Yeah. Hillbilly observation coming from Clarence in South Carolina. Bob, you're right on point with your hillbilly observation. The Vietnamese fought the U.S. with their hillbillies. The mighty NVA were conscripts from the countryside. Mountain folk, jungle folk, and farmers fought the U.S. for 30 years and succeeded with a win. Yeah. Hillbillies saved the American Revolution at the Battle of Kings Mountain. Got drunker and shit, got prayed over, and then marched over and slaughtered the fuck out of some redcoats. Yeah. My Republican U.S. Senator's no dummy, Randy in PA says. His offices in D.C. may still be closed, Pat Toomey. Oh, yeah, he don't want no Rona. Hell no. On a follow-up, Steve shares with us, coming from CNN. Intelligence that assessed that there was an effort by a Russian military intelligence unit to pay the Taliban to kill U.S. soldiers was included in one of President Donald Trump's daily briefings on intelligence matters sometime in the spring, according to a U.S. official with direct knowledge of the latest information. That assessment, the source said, was backed up by several pieces of information that supported the view that there was an effort by the Russian intelligence unit, the GRU, to pay bounties to kill U.S. soldiers, including interrogation of Taliban detainees and electronic eavesdropping. The source said there was some other information that did not corroborate this view, but said, nonetheless, this was a big deal. When it's about U.S. troops, you go after it 100% with everything you got. And then CNN adds, not even with so much of a smiley face emoji, Trump is not known to fully or regularly read the president's daily brief, something that is well known within the White House. You know why he doesn't read it? Go back to Neil Kasler, the guy who all those years as a production assistant on on The Apprentice watched him snort line after line after line of Adderall and also told us along the way, he can't read. He can't read. He can dope out a word here and there. That's why he ad-libs halfway through the all the way through the script most of the time. As to the bounty, the information was serious enough the National Security Council staff held a meeting during the spring to discuss possible response options, including sanctions if the intelligence developed to the point it was deemed ready to take to the president for any possible action. There is no way to develop information to the point that you can take it to the president because, again, he suffers from a combination of a congenital intellectual disability, a malevolent psychosis, and, you know, I've still got a $5 bill on the spirochetes. And a reminder, courtesy of Flavio, you can't cheat an honest man. That's the first commandment of W.C. Fields. Bernie Sanders didn't fall for Sacha Baron Cohen. And Trump is a germaphobe. Randy in PA says, you also told us Trump was afraid of germs, so what's up with that? Well, it's a battle between his ego and his phobia. And he has convinced himself that he cannot wear a mask and isolate himself, like he doesn't want the rest of us to do, isolate himself and stay clean. So this 3-hour filibobster is almost at an end, but we need one more giggle. I haven't even touched on the Supreme Court ruling that came down today. Big deal. John Roberts, old Balls and Strikes, actually called Balls and Strikes for a change. Back in 2016, in a Texas abortion case, Roberts opposed the majority opinion that came out that struck down that Texas law. He was among the dissenters. Well, the Louisiana case that came before them and that was announced today, the decision, was, for all intents and purposes, identical to the Texas case, and lo and behold, old Balls and Strikes Roberts sided with the four so-called liberal justices in striking down the Louisiana law, not because he agrees with it, or with them, I should say. He agrees with the law. He's terrible worried about the precious little fetuses. But he said the court has to live with its decisions. Stare decisis. Precedent. And so he voted to put a shiv in Brat. And Ann's boy Niels and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas and Sammy shoot the black kid in the back of the head at 30 feet even though he doesn't have a weapon and he's running away Alito's heart. Enter Susan Collins of Maine, who's, I'm sure, terribly disappointed. She will, you will recall, voted for Brat and said that
I believe him. Brett Kavanaugh says he'll uphold all legal precedent for abortion cases.
Well, that precedent was there. And he voted against it. And so she was roundly laughed at. and trying to salvage something resembling her reputation, she said,
Kavanaugh gave no indication in his dissenting opinion that he supports overturning Roe.
Ha, 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 ha! So, just making it impossible to get an abortion isn't the same thing as overturning Roe. Jesus, I hope the people of Maine throw her the fuck out. What a horror she is. And yes, indeed, wow. Somehow or another, I've managed to get through a three-hour filibobster. That's three of those in the last 2 weeks. But when you're up to your eyeballs in content, it's not that much of a challenge. Olympia beer is long gone. Say it ain't so, Sparky. Sparky says there's one switch. All they had to do is get to one switch. They didn't have to bum rush anybody. Yeah, but they're stupid Nazis. So that's it. A wonderful fundraising-free edition of The Horn. We've got two of those thanks to what y'all did on Friday. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air through your subscriptions via PayPal, Patreon, a la carte contributions, combinations of the above, U.S. Postal Service contributors. Thank all of you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And a reminder, if you shop at Amazon, please use smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the beneficiary of a portion of your proceeds going to them as a donation. It's tiny, but if a lot of people do it, it makes a big difference. And it costs you nothing. So thank you in advance. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay home. Please stay safe. Please wash your hands. Please wear your gloves and your mask. Please. Please. If you see somebody talking Trump trash, if you hear them talking it, if you see them and they're wearing a red hat or a Trump this or a Trump that, or even if they're just not wearing a mask, avoid them like the plague. Because they are. Brand new Fresh Malloy coming your way this evening. Here in about, 55 minutes or so. I always enjoy it. I know you do too. So later, y'all.